Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Ronan Soffer. Ronan is the Chief Product Officer with Intuition Robotics. Ronan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's start with Intuition Robotics. What problem is it solving in the marketplace?
Oh, lonely, older adults, usually at home. People who used to have a full life and an every day that is made of relationships and impact and work and activity and independence and meaning. And through the process that led them to continue and age alone, much has been emptied from that day to day. Together with behavioral changes that happen to us when we age, and this is, of course, a generalization, but it has substance in research. We initiate less, we dare less, we ask less for help. And the problem is growing, and it's growing only also in the ratio of this demographic group compared to who is out there to support them. So LEQ, Intuition Robotics' main product, is a desktop robot. It isn't there. I know there's a lot of humanoid, I can fold your laundry going on right now, and I like it. We can go back to that, by the way, and the relevance of what we're doing for those exciting products as well. But LEQ doesn't make coffee or clean your floor. Her robotic embodiment is only to serve as a presence and an entity that is sharing time and space with you on a day-to-day basis. The robot's role is really to be something that isn't an app on a smartphone or something. And then we say she, so forgive me in advance, I will probably use that term more than once today. She proactively, empathetically, suggests, motivates, supports with activities and suggestions and conversations and content through, I'd say, maybe three main areas: the cognitive and mental, the physical, and the interpersonal or social. And with this, a good morning conversation. What shall we do today? What are your plans? What can I help you with? How did you sleep? Because you told me about that backache that hurt your sleep a couple of days. Is it better now? Do you think we should call Dr. Feldman and tell them, if you're telling me this is the three morning in a row where you've told me you've suffered from this? So there's video calling, messaging, photo sharing. They can create content and share it with loved ones and people in their lives, near and far, but they can also share stuff with the LEQ community. We have more and more, if the first thing we discovered is one human, one robot, and the magic starts happening, increasingly in the past year, we've introduced features that define all our users as one community, and they're sure to have one thing in common. So they create content. We have live bingo games and live tours where they can log in and they can interact and learn and create communications with each other. And I'm saying this right before I take a much advised pause from this monologue. Because a lot of times when you say, hey, here's a robot that helps older people emotionally and cognitively, and people say, oh, you're ruining the human connection with your metallic coal technology. And no, no. In fact, where there are humans in our user's life that we can invigorate and enrich and motivate for more engagement and more communication in the real world, LEQ will do that with them. And in the absence of those, she will offer conversations and advice and be curious about you and want to learn about you and the things you've done in your past and what you've achieved and what you've learned from, and then offer you to save that as a memoir and maybe talk about things you understand and share them as lessons to the community and help you with medications and physical activity and meditation and relaxation and stress reduction and make you laugh and get to know your family and meaningful people and events in your life and constantly remember and reference and continuously act more and more upon what she's learned about you. And with this, I will end with a statement that Intuition Robotics is the company that makes a social home robot for older adults. It is also the company that it is spearheading what relationships will mean between humans and machines in the age that we're entering.
Sounds like you're solving a big problem. Obviously, many countries in the world have aging populations, not enough people being born to support top of the pyramid. So I understand what's taking place just from a demographic perspective. Is that what drove launching this company, or was there another genesis? Excuse me.
It was absolutely that. It was absolutely the founder's desire to balance that the situation that we're talking about and basically bring a real change through products and experiences that are based on technology. Also break the barrier and the digital divide. And you think COVID was this huge proof that this is going in the right direction, because older adults in the US were socially isolated and less independent and less connected and behind the digital barrier in many ways, even before COVID. But COVID made the walls higher overnight and the darkness was darker. And it was clear also to the organizations that have become good partners for us that loneliness and the effects of loneliness and isolation are becoming acute and they are becoming a burden. And there's also a social responsibility there. So absolutely, from the get-go, this is a company, you can feel it in the corridors, because I keep saying everybody out here could have gotten probably a higher paying job in cyber or gaming, or, I mean, there's demand. But this meeting point of good karma and the cutting edge of what companion agents can do for humans, and the experience we've gathered in actually being in people's homes for 3 years now, that makes this a very rewarding and exciting place to work.
Love it. Let's talk about your role. You're a chief product officer. What is your day-to-day entail?
So I'm not modest when I talk about product management. I believe in companies like Intuition Robotics, the product is the soul and it is the identity of the company. Why you exist, your raison d'etre lies on the product. The product is the answer to the problem you've set out to solve and how you decided to solve it. And the most exciting place to be, because you have sources or signals, but you essentially have to decide what's the right thing to do at what priority, and then define the experience. And it has to be real for users out there to accept and then engage with and then return to and then display or exude or report a positive sentiment about it. When you think about developing a companion robot, the primary metric for us in measuring success is engagement. In this pathway that leads from acceptance, I will give this weird gadget a chance in my living room, to engagement. Yeah, we had fun. She told me some jokes. We listened to some music. She asked me how I slept. I responded. And then I told her a little bit about where I went to school. Then at night, we did some stress reduction. And yeah, in the morning, she asked me out. So, okay, early engagement. Then the forming of a relationship. Something habitual is happening. The feedbacks change. I love it when she greets me when I come back home. It's wonderful that we spend some time drinking coffee together in the evening. When visitors come, I always show her off. My grandson Timmy loves to visit and chat with LEQ when he's here. He thinks grandma is so cool. You're seeing the relationships forming. Then the impact. LEQ is an agent that is not only based on Gen AI and look at me, I can talk for hours. She is goal-based. There's a lot of behavioral AI alongside the generative AI. And this is where the company has gathered a lot of experience and working code that's differentiated. The goal-based system allows for the agent, the robot, for LEQ to be driven for your success, for what's good for you. She's not only there to amuse or spend time. She has motivations to improve your life in given metrics or areas, and also build on a contextual engine that understands your day and your availability and a little bit about what time means for you. She will always try to orchestrate suggesting or offering the right thing at the right time that has the most relevance and value and chances of acceptance. And this is part of what's orchestrating and building the relationship. Marry that with memory, where she will not only be curious about you, but will show you throughout returning engagement that she remembers. And she say, you know what, let's cook Italian this evening. Because remember, you told me your honeymoon was in Rome? And I'll play some Italian music in the background. So even if it didn't change everything about that experience, reflecting that she remembers something from your previous conversation and can make the connection. So she'll do a lot of that. So building more experiences that are personal and interpersonal, that are in the cognitive areas or the conversational areas or the some areas of healthcare, but from the user's perspective, never to be treated as a patient. The product team and the conversation design team and the multimodal design teams that are working together in this group, they prioritize, define, design, and go through the implementation and launch, and sometimes early testing of each and every new capability that LEQ has. And I think it's, for me, there's no doubt. I delve a little bit, is that a word? In business development and obviously meet customers, and nothing beats product work.
Please go ahead.
No, I just, it you're dealing with the core, the heart of what the company does. And without having lonely older adults saying, yes, I want more of this. Nothing else means anything. This is the driver for business, and this is the driver for showing off what our unique technology can do, and this is the driver for the partnerships. And our users have to be content and excited and engaged. And that's what we as a group measure ourselves against.
Well, I think I may have just heard the answer, but let me just ask directly because I'm really curious to know. So, I'm going to pick two extremes. So Steve Jobs is famous for saying something to the effect of, I'll tell the market what it wants. And then on the other hand, you have product teams who, send net promoter scores, judiciously interview all their users and collect their feedback to decide what the product roadmap looks like. What's your philosophy? Where do you fall in making decisions?
Ooh, you're in trouble now. It's one of the most exciting questions, and it's funny. It's one of those discussions that no matter how many keynotes you've heard or conferences you went to, it will always remain open. And the beautiful thing is, when you succeed, nobody cares. Then you can go tell your story in a keynote, but people will only listen to the keynote because your credibility comes from the fact you've succeeded. And there's this book I always talk about by Hermann Hesse, telling the story of this Indian ancient guy called Siddhartha. And he met the Buddha. And he met the Buddha and he told the Buddha, look, I trust you. You're enlightened. But I don't think your story can make me enlightened. I think I need to go through my own things. So I don't know if what I'll say right now, like if people will listen to this and say, Ronan said, I said, well, you know what? But okay, don't take it as it is. Challenge it and find your own path. And I'm not saying I'm the Buddha of anything. I was just making this very loose analogy.
You're off the hook.
Product is not science. And product, in most cases, especially when it is human-centric and highly driven on experiences or based on experiences, it can't be cautious of data-driven. That is the forte in many boardrooms.
Yeah.
What is an entrepreneur that is going to develop a product? In my definition, an entrepreneur that says, I'm going to create a product, the thing that motivates the entrepreneur is the notion of, I do not accept reality as it is. People are telling me, this is how it is. All people are lonely. Somebody comes to visit them like a social worker every week. It's okay. We see that they're still alive. We see if their fridge is full. It's okay. It's fine. This is how it is. We don't have more power. We don't have more manpower. What can you do? Or people used to say, you have to haul a taxi in New York and some angry guy will come. If you leave your phone in the car, you'll never find it again or whatever. You know, not phone, this wallet. Okay, this is old days. And entrepreneurs say, no, I think this can be changed. And then product is the next thing you ask. How are you going to change it? And sometimes it's business model. Sometimes you take a real estate company and present it like a tech company and they make a movie about you when you fall. But for us simple people, it's we need a product. For Steve Jobs, it was a product. It was the iPod and iTunes. And he says, okay, I'm going to change it. And then Spotify changed it again with how we look at music and how we access music. It's like, no, I don't accept that record labels control everything the way they do, and it has to be physical copies or whatever. So forget rights management. We'll change the model, right? The birth of this has to have intuition. It can be based on data. You can take reports from McKinsey and Gartner, but there's a reason why McKinsey and Gartner aren't entrepreneurs. They will give you the baseline. They will give you the logic to support the juice, but the juice has to be there. I'm going to solve this problem. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to look at the human need. I'm going to look at situations. I'm going to look at stuff that I'm going to experience. And people say product managers need empathy, and empathy sounds like it's a moral thing. It's not about the moral side. I don't object the moral side of empathy, but
sure.
Product managers need empathy because they need to be able, just like that movie, Being John Malkovich, they need to enter the cognition of their user. They need to view the world in the eyes of their user. And that is not science. That is something that you need to apply from entrepreneurial conviction and curiosity and empathy and determination to solve a problem. And this is the stem. This is the birth. Now, something amazing happens when you start having users. Do you know the cliche? If I ask the users, Henry Ford said, give me more horses, faster horses. But that's because you don't listen. If you listen, they tell you, I wish I could get there sooner and without the dust of riding. Because last week, I had to ride somewhere on my horse and it was a date and I was all done. My jeans were all dusted. And then, okay, they need a car. So, yeah. When you have users, it becomes real. Something becomes real. And then you can listen to them, also to their intuitions, but also to the data their usage manufactures. Now, if you're in advertising tech and you get a million data signals per hour, you get up in the morning, you look at the dashboard and you change a little bit how you split the budget money in the campaign, that's fine. But if you're serving older adults that are not even on the adapters graph with a category that doesn't exist because nobody out there is Googling, I need a desktop social robot for my grandma. Nobody, it's a non-existing category. We're creating it. Then there has to be a lot of art with the science. But when science comes in, embrace it.
So I'd love to know how you developed your empathy leading up to joining Intuition.
Well, always a product guy. Okay, so I don't know.
Your expression in general, like how did it evolve?
I can talk about like probably this is where all your guests, like they don't know where to begin. Because probably a lot of people my age told you about the Commodore 64 or Spectrum, Sinclair Spectrum, or in my case, Dragon 32 that they had at home. Software and personal computing was new when I was in my very early teens, maybe even before. And it promised for the first time the power to explain something that you want and it happens. You could write a program and the program would do what you wanted to happen. And that planted a seed with me that like, wow, I like where this is going. And I saw something on TV that engineers in Japan managed to determine the location of a car on a map. And then have a voice speak and say how far you are from the destination and what heading you should be, what direction you should be taking. It was like a 60-second clip on some innovations and adventures or technology, whatever, you know, like these things we had in early 80s. And then I became a software guy and I was a developer and a team leader and systems analyst and a project manager. And I did a lot of large scale projects. And then I joined a couple of people and we started a mobile navigation company. And my fascination from that 60-second clip about the Japanese engineers. And we started Telmap, which became a leader in mobile offboard navigation in the 2000s and got acquired by Intel. And at Intel, tens of people continued to do really exciting things on the wearable space, personal IoT and wearables. Crazy advanced stuff that we built there. And I was a GM at Intel suddenly, a street cat that accidentally became like an Intel guy. It was amazing. It was an amazing time. I learned really a lot. And surprisingly, it was also very entrepreneurial. We kept inventing stuff and pushing it. And like the senior management was like, okay, bring it on. And a lot of experience and a lot of lessons learned. And during my time at Intel and after the Telmap acquisition, I started getting invited to advisory boards. is still one of my favorite things to do. Because of that sweet spot between having experience but not being emotionally involved too deeply. And it gives you that, sometimes it gives you that prism that really helps make right decisions or tell the story in a strategic way. And that's where I was introduced to Intuition Robotics. That was in the period of early user testing to the founding members. And I joined originally as an advisory board member and then as a leader.
Fantastic. So fast forward till today, artificial intelligence, you know, obviously I know it's been around for years, but with ChatGPT's advent of OpenAI, it's taking a new meaning. At what point in your career did you become aware of the technology and the extent that it could have a more meaningful experience when combined with robotics?
Right. Everybody in the community of conversational interfaces and relation and conversational relationships between humans and machines, we're constantly looking at what neural networks could do to replace NLP, NLU, natural language processing and understanding. That was the flavor of the month for a long period. And natural language understanding was always limited to the approaches you could apply to the conversation and your ability with this technology to convert it into actions or meaning in the digital or physical worlds with any permutation. What LLMs have changed in the most foundational way is here is a technology that understands language or the behavior of human language without even understanding anything. It doesn't matter. We don't even need to go into what I just said, the provocative claim that LLMs understand language without understanding meaning, because it doesn't matter. It works. It works. And there's something there. And there was a moment where this industry was looking at this paradigm shift or whatever the term is, but revolution, something's happening. With NLU, you had control, but you paid for this control with a very limited solution. So people had to learn what to say to the machine, and the machine wouldn't always respond in the way they thought, and conversations were clumsy, and big companies doing a one-size-fits-all assistant for the general population were very careful about having multi-turn conversations where they could lose a little bit the conversational context, and then the user would feel frustrated because you understood me at first, and then suddenly you became a bit thick or like less intelligent. Why did that happen? So they deliberately kept their risks to like command and control. Then the flood opened and your LLM can seem to understand everything. But it doesn't understand on your behalf. It understands the way the model happens to navigate word after word in trying to construct a semantic continuum in a given context. And with the high appeal of like hugging this technology, you also had to understand that there's going to be a bit of a rodeo here. This is a wild horse and it needs taming. And quite rapidly, the whole industry reacted with, we need guardrails, we need policies, we need to be able to affect the character, we need to be able to control what is understood as an action. Because in the case of LEQ, this might sound like a cliche, but it tells the story. If I say to ChatGPT, I have a headache, ChatGPT will answer based on this context and will be very coherent in saying, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Consider taking an aspirin if you're not allergic. If it persists, call your doctor. It will give you this. LEQ wants to take over and say, this is the third time you told me about this, and I know you're allergic to aspirin. And tell me, does it hurt on the right side again? Because if it does, Dr. Feldman said we should call. In the meantime, here's a relaxation video that worked for us the last time. See if that helps you with your migraine. And in doing that, we've added dimensions that the semantic layer itself, even if you enrich its contextual capabilities, will not be able to do. Unless married with other technologies, which is what we're doing here. So when I say we were at the forefront, not only in training our own models and understanding the boundaries and capabilities of what we can do, and is that control or achievement worth the costs and complexities of that, but also what do we need to do with this wild horse, new wild horse, to enjoy the horsepower, but not have everything broken in our ranch? And we were really at the forefront of understanding and building the orchestration and guardrails and policies and character and action mapping understanding to make this essentially very useful and coherent and valuable to who? To lonely older adults in the US whom we serve. Because this wasn't about technology for us, still isn't. It was about, can we make LEQ better for them? And I think we're at the point right now where we've removed a few of the leashes we kept on our LLMs. We use more than one in more than one context, but we've now gained enough confidence to remove two or three of these leashes and allow the LLM-based capabilities to have more face time with the users in a more natural way. So we're seeing engagement go up from even more natural, unpredictable conversations. And then we remember and act upon and make suggestions, and everything is rounder and more valuable to our users.
So I'm curious, so my impression has always been that we're still in the very early innings of the development of the technology. How do you see this evolving?
There is excitement right now. And it's justified, just as excitement was justified in previous waves of meaningful technological advance. Sometimes there's a disillusion, like with autonomous vehicles. There's still a good idea, but suddenly investors get disappointed, or should have happened faster or whatever. And machines will grow capabilities that will change the relationships between them and the humans they need to serve with value, just like this does, and my nav system does, and my kids' Xbox does. Okay, these products are built to help humans, and technology succeeds packaged as a product when it gives you more for less. More value for less money, time, anxiety, pressure, things to do, clicks, whatever. We now have the ability to, let me put it this way. On one end, the robotics and physical AI people are teaching embodied AI to perform complex actions in the real world. So robots can now really fold your laundry. On the other side, semantic and conversational capabilities are improving in a crazy pace. What intuition robotics is saying, for this to really succeed in the field with humans over time, there's a missing piece in the middle, and that's the heart and the brain of the machine. The part that doesn't care about, I can do this or I can do that. The part that cares about you and what you need, your habits, your concerns, your preferences, your needs, your intents, your and in a cross-domain way. And you need these machines, these products, to have something that is closer to a human-to-human relationship. And I don't mean areas of companionship and that are maybe outside the scope. I mean solely for being a better, more efficient solution for the value you need, for the jobs you need get done, need help with as a human.
Well, it sounds like Intuition Robotics is on a path to bring this to life. I mean, really exciting. Earlier you referenced, I think the proper name was Goal. Was the AI component that effectively sounds like memory.
Oh no, goal-based. It remembers, and it also has a goal-based behavioral mechanism that, based on clear tasks or things that it wants to achieve with you, it will motivate and drive and suggest. It has motivation to help you.
Well, I learned something new today because I didn't realize this tech existed yet. And I'm really excited given I have an aging mom. And I'm very fortunate I get to see her on a regular basis, not as much as I'd like. So I'm going to continue to cheer you on.
Can you help us by adding her to our beta user group, maybe?
Happy to do so.
Why not?
On my to-do list, I will follow up.
Great. We would love that.
Excellent. Ronan, before we wrap up, you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self. What would you share?
Purpose. Purpose in everything you do. Be able to explain purpose to yourself. It has to be there. It has to be there for what you're doing to make sense and be real and eventually lead to achievements. Never do things because they seem like the right things to do or there's momentum in that direction. And even if you do, ask yourself, purpose, what am I optimizing for? What am I measuring? What is the deepest currency for defining why this is the right thing to do? Why am I doing what I'm doing? I think for me, purpose has become, many times you go into meetings and people say, so how shall we do it? I say, whoa, whoa, no, no. Why are we doing this? In the deepest, deepest form. And then it sounds trivial, but things crystallize. Suddenly when people talk to each other and say, this is a good thing. It's a good thing, but is it a good thing that fits the deepest reason of why we're doing this and what we're hoping to achieve? And that, I'm saying this now and it sounds really trivial, but just stop and ask and see if the answer comes back naturally, then okay, you're moving in the right direction. If not, explore, research that a little bit, challenge it. Because you might be burning calories on the wrong thing.
I love it and I agree. Having a clear understanding of why you're doing what you are, extremely valuable on a whole host of levels. That's been my experience as well. Before we wrap up, is there anyone in your personal professional network that you'd love to recognize for having had a positive impact on you over the years?
I learned a lot of things from a lot of people, but I never had a mentor. The closest thing I ever got to a mentor was this really smart guy called Muli Eden, who was SVP at Intel when the acquisition happened. He didn't even have anything to do with the acquisition, or what happened after, like. But he found me as a street cat that someone dragged in to Intel, like serious international corporate. And he more than anything, gave me confidence and advice, and served as inspiration. And he retired from being very senior at Intel, and he's still involved in a lot of things as an investor and advisor, etc. And he's involved in a lot of things. There are a lot of people I could name, but I would choose him.
Fantastic. Well, kudos to anyone who sees the street cats, recognize them, and will pull them in. We know we need more of them. That's fantastic. Ronan, if there are any members of our audience who'd like to get a hold of you or learn more about Intuition Robotics, how can they find you?
Ronan at intuitionrobotics.com.
Fantastic.
Pleasure.
Ronan, thank you so much. Genuinely appreciate your time and sharing your perspective with us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Ronan Soffer, Ronan, Chief Product Officer, Intuition Robotics. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators Investors Podcast.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is at finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.